This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, a website, a portfolio, or an online store. Create your own space today by visiting squarespace.com and use offer code TREK10 to save 10%. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushii.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Star Trek Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me once again, as he is every single week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, you're coming to us tonight from a dimly lit room, and you know, I just saw this Klingon woman walk in behind you, and she's glorious. I've never seen a woman like that before.
Well, Chris, I was just setting the mood lighting. You know, Klingons kind of like the mood, especially when they get romantic, to be more candlelit, firelit. You know, if you notice in any of those Klingon scenes, they're always dimly lit with the fires burning in a nice, you know, fire pit or some sort of, you know,
right.
You know, torch or something, candles, you know. I was entertaining a Klingon friend of mine, a female Klingon friend, and was interrupted because we needed to record tonight. So we're trying to make this as quick as possible. Klingons don't like to wait.
They really don't. And would you mind explaining this Ferengi fur you're wearing?
I would explain it then, Chris, but it might get a little embarrassing for some of the listeners. So I'll just leave it to their imagination.
Okay, I think that's probably a good idea. So obviously, we are talking about Quark and his lovely ex-wife, Grilka, in the episode Looking for Parmok in All the Wrong Places, an episode that would make Eddie Rabbit proud. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. In fact, we're not just going to talk about it. We're going to do a commentary, as we do periodically here on The Orb. So if you'd like to queue up the episode on your DVD player, Netflix, iTunes, however you watch your Star Trek, and I get that set, and then come back, and we'll give you a countdown, and we'll get ready to hit play. So if you're ready, hit play in 3, 2, 1, go.
I really like the beginning here. Just sauntering by their quarters, you know, just nonchalantly hoping that Miles won't be busy, and instead he hears fighting.
And why is Quark loitering down the hallway past the O'Brien's room?
You know, I was wondering that too when I was watching this afternoon, and I was thinking maybe Quark's quarters aren't far from the O'Brien's, and so he's like headed home. And then he sees, you know, Bashir standing there, and then, of course, you know, apparently this whole section knows when they're fighting, and so, and then, of course, I think my favorite part is that, you know, thinks it's Miles and Keiko fighting here, and it's not. It's Nerys, right, and Miles fighting.
Well, even the explanation that Quark gives of it, though, is so great, because we often talk about how Miles and Keiko are like one of the only real couples in Star Trek, and they actually do behave like a real couple and a real married couple. And the way that Quark describes it, yeah, you know, it's not very interesting, really. And of course, it's the other O'Briens. It's Miles and Kira. But when they're fighting, it sounds to the outside world just like they are the couple.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's funny too. You know, we always joke on the network that Miles and Bashir are a couple, and so apparently Miles has three. He's a part of three couples, you know, now.
Yes. There's Miles and Keiko, Miles and Kira, and Miles and Jules. Although I think Miles and Jules have the best relationship of the three.
Yeah, they do, honestly. And honestly, I think it's Kira and Miles that have a great relationship, especially by this point. They really have good chemistry on screen, honestly. So
they do, yeah.
I loved this because you don't often see Worf transfixed by anything, you know, just like completely taken aback by something. And the way that he's taken aback by Grilka is just is very funny, because this whole episode is very non-Worf. I mean, you know, he spends the whole time just being kind of Twitter-pated with this yeah. woman. And then, of course, helping Quark, which is so not Worf.
And what's also funny here is when you watch the series back through after you've seen it all before, and you know that Worf and Jadzia get together, and Worf seems, he's like the typical guy when there's this woman who is attracted to him and he's oblivious to it. You really feel here that Jadzia is attracted to Worf, at least I do. And when you, for the moment, when you don't recall, if you're watching them out of order, you know, they're not quite together yet. And when Worf turns to look at Grilka and he's so transfixed by her, and Worf says, you know, I've never seen a woman like that before. And Jadzia's kind of like, I'm right here, Worf, I'm right here.
It is so funny because, and two, you can tell that, I mean, they had this same chemistry from the first time that he came on the station when yeah. he said, nice hat. I mean, just the way she looked back at him, there was something there on screen. And so they do such a great job, these two, of really, you know, playing off each other. And so,
you know, Ronald D. Moore mentions how they noticed, as the writers, they noticed right away that Terry Farrell and Michael Dorn had that great chemistry together, and how Terry Farrell was very flirtatious towards Michael Dorn when they were just playing their ordinary scenes together. And so they started writing that into the scripts to see where it would go. And as they wrote more and more of it, they really liked how it was coming together. And so that planted the seeds for the relationship between Worf and Jadzia in the first place.
Well, and it really does work so well because, you know, instead of just kind of shoving the characters together, kind of writing them more and more scenes together and seeing how that plays out, you know, if it didn't work, you don't really lose anything by doing that. And they obviously have such great chemistry. It turns out perfectly, and it feels so natural than doing it that yeah. way, because then it feels just like a natural progression as any real relationship is. And so that by the time you get to even this episode, you have something that feels like something that's becoming a long time, even though the writers probably, you know, they've been maybe thinking about this probably since halfway season, you know, four, maybe writing a few more things for them to do together and stuff. So it's really good. I love it. And
I'm glad they didn't go the route of having Jadzia wear lots of different hats all the time around the station mm-hmm. just to try to get Worf's attention, because that would have been a little bit odd for Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, a little bit much. Luckily, because, and just imagine the hat she might wear. I mean, think of Guinan's hats. So
yeah,
good thing that did not happen.
Then she wears the little hat like Worf had on in Cupid. And that really ticks him off, yeah. And that's the end of it all.
Yeah. I don't really think that he would be with her after that. I mean, he would feel like somebody from the Enterprise just told her what happened, and that was enough. So. It's a good scene here between Quark and Grilka. I really like the fact that they have some good chemistry on screen as well. They just kind of sparkle when they're together, which made me sad that she didn't come on very much. I mean, it would have been kind of cool to maybe have her on one more time.
Just two episodes.
Yeah. You know, I think about this is the fifth season, maybe like a sixth season or seventh season episode would have been great just to, you know, especially with the war going on and everything, it would have been great to have her back one more time. Maybe she dies or something. I think that would have been awesome character arc for Quark here, just to have to go through something like that. It would have been really interesting. Especially since, you know, by the end of this episode, they're together. I mean, you know, they've had a cementing of the relationships, should we say. And so, but the fact that it never plays out later on is kind of sad.
The whole idea of Quark with a Klingon, though, is just, it's funny. Worf's reaction to it when he finds out, it really is the audience's reaction, I feel.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Great that this episode is directed by Andrew Robinson. So Garrick isn't in the episode. He's mentioned, but he's not in the episode because he's directing it. He does a great job.
It's another one of those great things where on Star Trek, they had the unofficial director's school, where they would have actors who wanted to direct kind of follow other directors around the set, learn the ropes. You know, that's right. How Robbie got in. That's how Roxanne got into doing that, and Frakes and everyone. And same thing here for Andy Robinson. And he had just won some awards for his directing of plays in Los Angeles from the LA Drama Critic Awards.
Oh, yeah.
And he had done Endgame and The Homecoming. And the timing of it coincided with kind of a lead into this. And he got Rick Berman's attention that way in terms of wanting to direct DS9. And he got in and ended up with this episode.
I really love this whole scene because Worf is wanting just the like very bare minimum of the story. And she's telling it like Gen Z always tells stories. She's embellishing and getting lost in it. And he's just like, why? And this one scene for Sisko is great. just to get a little jab in at Worf. This is the thing I think that I loved about
reaction that way. About, it's hilarious.
About having him on the station, though, is that it really just opened up his character because they're a big family. And, you know, there's times like this on the station where it's kind of boring, you know, and so all that's going on is really their lives. And it was just a great way to make Worf a more dynamic character.
Oh, definitely.
I really
Miles
like
and Jules here. Wow.
It's classic. Them and you can tell Miles is feeling a little lonely Jules is feeling a little lonely because Miles has been so busy lately, obviously taking care of Kira and the kids and Keiko and all that.
Yeah,
but it's just funny because it seems a little bit too, you can tell that Julian is growing up just a little bit because he's not quite as, you know, needy. He gets the message that Miles is too busy and then he just enjoys ribbing his best friend. And it's great.
Yeah. You talked about how with Worf being on the show and there's downtime on the station where not much is happening. And this is great with Miles and Jules here, this scene, because you can imagine that this is what goes on between the two of them on the station pretty much every day. You know, we get to see all the big events that are happening, but this is like everyday life for Miles and Jules.
Right. This is my favorite part. Did you look?
I know, right?
Yeah. Oh, please. I was holding a towel in front of her. Oh, goodness. It's so funny because can you imagine somebody else carrying your, you know, if you had a surrogate basically and they're living in your house, and I'm still pretty sure that your wife would probably care, you know, if you were like helping her out of the shower for some reason.
Right. Yeah. That would be awkward. You know, this scene right here, the way that Alexander Siddig plays the scene, this, of course, Nana Visitor is actually pregnant and she's pregnant with his baby in real life. And they wrote it into the show, but you can tell that they are a couple because the way that Alexander Siddig is playing that scene and talking to Miles about this, the feeling, it's like it's not even acting. It's like, you know, did you look at my wife when she was getting in the bath? Yeah,
exactly. That whole idea is, I've seen her naked. You've seen her naked too.
This moment right here, you know the writers have been waiting for 5 seasons for someone to pick up Morn and throw him off that bitch.
And that really, really puffy suit that he lands on must feel like landing on marshmallows.
Softest landing ever.
Exactly. Trek. It is really funny that, you know, he gets rejected, Worf does, for not knowing anything about Klingon women, and yet, obviously, he knows a lot about Klingon women, and he knows a lot about pursuing them, because he's spent a lot of time studying Klingons. You know, everybody just expects that he doesn't know these things, and so...
But the difference with Worf, though, is that, and we've talked about this before on some other shows, that he's the person who knows a culture because he studied the culture, but not because he lived in the culture. And so everything is just not quite right. He does things by the book. Same with a language. Like, you can study a language in a book and you can speak the language, but you're not going to sound like an actual native speaker just right. from that.
Yeah. And I think that is something that's really interesting here. And yet, at the same time, his tutelage of Quark, you know, really pays off for Quark, and Grokka buys every moment of it without, you know, even thinking that Quark is not, you know, knowing all this stuff in and of himself, or, you know, putting in the time.
Grokka's
and the
giving Quark a little bit of leeway because he's not a Klingon.
That's true. Well, and you also get the feeling here that she's only, Worf really is only being rejected because she's not interested. It has nothing to do with whether or not Worf is Klingon enough or any of that. She's just not interested. She's interested in Quark. And so, to me, at least, that's how it plays off. I don't know if it plays off like that to you. So,
you know, what's interesting here, too, is, okay, so, of course, this is based on the famous play Cyrano de Bergerac by Edmond Rostand, and that was the idea of bringing this in. But the two characters there, you have Cyrano, who's unattractive, and you have Christian, who's the attractive man here. But Worf in here is actually playing Cyrano, who's the unattractive character. Quark is playing Christian, who's the attractive one. Does that feel right to you? So if you're a Klingon woman and you're looking at Worf and you're looking at Quark, who would you find to be Christian? Who would you find to be Cyrano in the situation?
You know, I don't think I would be looking at Quark, but obviously Grokka is a special Klingon woman, which is another cool thing about this. You know, Ronald D. Moore writes this episode and really added some layers into Klingons here. You know, the fact that they're not all the same. And we've talked about that before on the show, and, you know, giving Martok a very Klingon person, and yet not just a cookie cutter Klingon. The same way, getting this Klingon woman, you know, we've seen that before with Lursa and Bator. They're not really, you know, I mean, they'll go for anything. Klingon women seem to be up and game for anyone. They don't seem to be as you know, cutthroat about, I have to have a Klingon man.
Don't forget the Klingon women on the Paw in A Matter of Honor, who both say that they'll take, I'll take him. I'll take Riker.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not very attractive, well, but I'll take him.
Well, it's probably just because Riker had put his leg up on something and they're like, yeah, take that. The Riker maneuver looks good.
That's right.
I like this whole scene here too, at the very beginning of it, just because, you know, who hasn't been in that kind of relationship that Dax is in right now? She's really liking the guy who's not, you know, who, you know, doesn't like her, and she's kind of helping him, you know, with his other love life, just trying to be a good friend. And the whole time she's like, hello, I'm right here.
I'm right here, Worf.
Yeah. Just, I don't know how to make it any more obvious. I could do the Riker maneuver, but I don't know if it would work on you. Well, this is another good thing about, I mean, another good scene here, just showing how much Worf really does know. Not only does he know about Klingons, but he knows about all the specific provinces, apparently, and their customs and, you know, what would be appropriate for this specific province that Grilka's from, and what you'd want to do to win her heart, you know, the first time you go a courting. And I thought that that was really interesting, again, just disproving that whole idea that he doesn't know anything about Klingons, or he couldn't live comfortably in a Klingon life. I just don't know if he would be satisfied living a Klingon life after being with humans so long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's I agree on that.
So Chris, you're the married man right now in this podcast. If this was happening in your home, would your wife just walk in and out and, you know, put things away, and she wouldn't mind if you were just massaging up another woman, even if she was carrying y'all's child?
No, I don't think so. Although if you watch Keiko's face and watch her reactions in here, it's kind of funny. It's like it really, it does bother her, and she's putting on this fake front.
You know, I was wondering that too. Is that happening, or is she just really kind of oblivious, or is she just wanting to be oblivious to the fact that that could happen between her husband and, you know, another woman?
No, I think it's a very Japanese thing. Actually, this is a case where I feel like Keiko is actually playing the role is Japanese a little bit, and that I mean that, you know, there's this famous saying, well, it's made famous by Dave Barry, that when the Japanese say no, they mean no. When they say yes, they mean no. When they say that would be difficult, they mean that's absolutely impossible. Meaning that there's a politeness that's presented no matter what the feeling is underneath. And that's what I'm feeling from Keiko in the scene. It's kind of like, okay, I'm going to be very polite about this, but I'm watching you, Miles.
Well, and what I really liked about this episode.
This is where they stop. They're like, wait a minute, what did you just say?
Yeah. It's a really good scene, though, because, you know, if, you know, as any man and any woman, you know, you spend that much time together, you get this intimate, you know, their friendship. They've obviously been spending this time talking, and, you know, they're getting to know each other and all these things. Obviously, Kira is attractive. She's carrying your child. There's going to be something that goes beyond, you know, a friendship start to form. And so I appreciate that they kind of touch on that in this subject, and you watch them have to handle this as like adults, you know, and I think that's a really cool thing, especially in a day and age on TV where people just hop in and out of bed together and have affairs as if they're just nothing. You know, this really treats it, you know, the whole idea of marriage is with respect. And so it's nice.
I love here that this is the bridge of a warship, and Worf is using it to practice opera.
Well, yeah, it's a really, just think about this, Klingon opera, it's meant to be on the bridge of some kind of warship or battlefield.
That's so true.
Perfect place to be singing.
Maybe, you know. What's missing is the Defiant needs to have red lighting and smoke everywhere.
Oh, yeah. On the bridge. I was surprised that Worf had not started the smoke machine. Must have run out of dry ice. It is very funny, this scene, watching Michael Dorn's reaction as he's just kind of listening to all that happened between Quark and Grilka. And you can tell he's like, okay, don't know if I want to be listening to this story anymore. I can give you some more pointers. I don't know why I'm giving you pointers. I feel like he wants to just haul off and smack him across the bridge as hard as possible, and he's kind of restraining himself from doing so.
Worf is pretty good at restraining himself, actually.
Yeah, it's true. I just feel like that if he was truly Klingon, he probably would already have thrown him through the bulkhead.
He would say, if you were a Klingon, I would kill you where you stand.
I do, and I like the way that, you know, Quark just said, you have the key to this woman's heart, and he just unlocks something in Worf that it's like, even though Worf can't get her, if he can help Quark get her, he'll be vindicated, you know, in some way. Like, he'll have proven his honor by, because it won't really have been Quark, it'll have been him. And so I feel like that may be the, one of the reasons that he helps Quark in this episode.
Now, do you feel like here that it was a missed opportunity that they should have had Skeletor helping them teach Quark how to fight, you know, from Worf's Enterprise-D programs?
That would have been really cool. I don't know if Quark could have handled Skeletor even on the lowest level. I just feel like, yeah, he would not have been able to handle that.
Boy, Jadzia's really getting into this.
Well, the thing is she's imagining that she's doing this with Worf, and so that's why her performance is so good. Quark, of course, is just stumbling over the fact that it's Klingon, it's sweaty, it's bloody. I like the Klingon facepalm we get there from Worf. Which is funny because you don't often see Michael Dorn, you know, touch his ridges at all. But the fact that he does that there is just so very, it makes it so much more real, you know, because you don't really see people touch their prosthetics much on the show. But when that happens, it makes you feel like it's an actual character. And so that, that little moment was really good. It is pretty funny what Klingons think is romantic. I mean, all this blood and death and everything, and oh, there's guts on the floor, and I've just skewered 1,000, you know, warriors, and I probably smell like them too.
The Quark. This is ridiculous. That's your opinion of what Klingons find romantic, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess, like Quark, we would probably find things like Ryza to be more romantic than this.
I think
know?
So. The growl.
Yeah.
Terry Farrell's growl.
It's awesome. I think the thing that was great about this episode, too, is that it was almost like a change of pace for everyone. You know, they've done humorous episodes before, but usually they are specifically Ferengi, but everybody in this episode is getting a chance to be funny without it being just a Ferengi episode. And so,
Without it being, they're not, I mean, I say they're not trying to be funny. It's intended to be humorous to you, but it's not outright, it's not a comedy episode, right? I mean, it's funny if you know the characters very well. It may not be as funny as you're if you're not invested in the characters.
Yeah.
Like this scene here between Odo and Kira is fantastic, especially Odo. I mean, Odo is in rare form right here.
Yeah, I feel like they really pulled a great performance out of Renee with just this whole idea of, so who are you? You know, brother, sister? Like,
cousin?
What exactly? What part of the family are you? Because any other part's just kind of incestuous.
Look at Odo.
Well, and I really do enjoy too. I think it's great this the discomfort that Nana is feeling at this moment in this conversation, realizing that there is something that isn't quite right between her and Miles, like in a way that she's not going to be comfortable with later on in the episode when they get on that runabout. It's really good. I think it's really smart the way they kind of build this through the episode and, you know, have him deal with something like this. And for once, we're torturing Miles without him having to go to like prison for 400 years or whatever.
Right. So let me ask you this. When Thopak Kyr says, it's outrageous, does it remind you of anything? Do you know what other role Phil Morris played, where he says, "It's outrageous."
No, what is, which one?
He's Jackie Chiles from Seinfeld.
Oh gosh, that's
he's Kramer's
funny.
Lawyer.
That's
which I love
awesome.
In here too, when they talk about getting, do you have an ointment? And I'm thinking,
right,
an ointment, a bomb. Who told you to use a bomb? You know what a bomb does?
Oh man. I like this scene right here because I like how Quark is becoming more and more confident. And even when he says something Ferengi and she kind of recoils, he knows exactly what next to say to help her melt again. And just you can see that there's something different about Quark when it comes to other Ferengis. Like, he has a more human Ferengi view on relationships at this point. He's not just purely out there to acquire something as a real Ferengi would in a mate, but he's actually looking for, you know, more of a relationship. And so I really like that a lot. I think it's great.
Well, that's the evolution of the character, which we talk about sometimes on the station, and just the intermixing of the different cultures on Deep Space Nine and how everyone on the station, it's like you were saying earlier about Worf not being satisfied if he were to go live on Kronos and actually live a Klingon life, because he's more rounded than that at this point, and he would always feel, even though he may, in many respects, be getting what he always wanted, he would also feel a lot missing.
Right. I think this is another one of those great scenes where you see the husband realizing that something's a little off in his marriage and doing what he can to put it back together, you know, and
yeah.
It's another great scene for, you know, we've talked about this before, how Miles and Keiko are really the only like real relationship that we get to see all throughout Star Trek that really shows what it's like to be a real married couple. And I really like the fact that they're kind of just having to deal with this, because this isn't something that most married couples don't have to deal with at least once. And I think that's really cool.
By which you're not talking about having a third person who is being a surrogate come in the middle of a nice glass of wine together.
Right, exactly. Yeah, just more the fact that one of you is going to probably be attracted to somebody at least once, you know, throughout, you know, 30 years of marriage or whatnot, that people are married. And so, and how do you deal with that?
And now Keiko is trying to push them together. And they're both recoiling. They're like, it's okay.
It's fine. No, I think it'd be great if we didn't do that. Yeah, this is the scene though, and I guess you can speak to this living in Japan, but is she, I mean, she really doesn't want him to go, but she's still gonna push him to go with her?
Well, no, at this point I think that she doesn't want Kira to go to Bajor alone carrying the child, because she's worried about the child. So
yeah,
I think that's the primary thing here.
Okay. I mean, like, what does she think is going to happen? I mean, it's the 24th century. Even if she goes into labor, somebody can be there pronto. I mean, you know, Bajoran doctors are right there. Even if it's 20 kilometers away, you can just beam somebody over there. It's not that difficult.
I wonder if that's true. I wonder if they have rituals for waste extraction.
Oh, I hope not, because that just sounds like a big waste of time. I liked on Memory Alpha, they were talking about how Ronald D. Moore, he wrote the episode, and that he didn't feel the need to explain this process at all. Which,
yeah.
At that point, like, I of course I don't need anybody to explain how this works for me. It's Star Trek.
because on Voyager, there would have been a 10-minute scene where they had a meeting and they planned the device and then they would have diagrammed it. At TNG, Geordi would have diagrammed it. Voyager, B'Elanna would have built it. Here, it's just like, well, Worf's wearing something.
Wouldn't Tuvok have given us a whole PowerPoint presentation on how it works?
Oh, yeah. He would have.
Yeah. So that's at least 15 minutes of the episode.
People want to have crossover stories. Imagine Tuvok and Geordi together doing presentations. They like tour the Federation giving presentations. That would be awesome.
Putting people to sleep all over.
But I don't know. You know, they're especially Geordi. He's really dynamic in his presentation skills.
You know, this is true. If he could only be that dynamic with the ladies, he wouldn't have had all those problems.
Yeah, I don't think Geordi could have gotten Gorilka here, do you?
No.
Worf's help.
Exactly. No, he would have been lost. I love this. Would you have put her on a pedestal and clean her every week?
This is where we were talking about earlier how Jadzia is saying, I'm right here, Worf. Notice me. Here's like the final push. It's like, I could do a lot in your boots.
Yeah, exactly. I get the feeling like she's really getting to that point where she's going to say, you have no idea what I could do to you. And you're missing out, bub. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly. I like this little device that they come up with here, though, because it also reminds me of an episode of Phineas and Ferb, where Phineas and Ferb, they develop this little suit that Candace's boyfriend can wear to be on this dance competition show on television, where I think it's Ferb does the dance remotely, but the suit controls the other person dancing. So it's kind of the same thing that Worf and Quark have going here with the Batleth fight.
Everything comes back to Phineas and Ferb with you, doesn't it?
It does. This is the Klingon woman Gitanator.
Apparently, Phineas and Ferb is like the I Ching of life. I just didn't realize. So, you know, before this scene, they had told him to go to bed early so that, you know, he could rest because his body would be no good. My feeling, though, is that he would have woken up in so much pain from all the muscles he's never used in his entire life after that, you know, first day working out, that he wouldn't be able to move at all unless Bashir had given him something really, really strong.
Yeah, I think Bashir did something off screen that we didn't see.
That poor guy, Bashir, the whole episode, all he's done is patch people up, you know, give them inhalers and herbs and then watch other people come in after they've had sex, and he's just...
Right. Now, you know, with this battle scene here, Armin Shimerman said he got together with Dan Curry to work on the choreography, and he took a Batleth home for 10 days to practice the choreography for this, and Shimerman says he actually got to be pretty good with the Batleth, so most of the fighting here, it's really this... It is Armin doing... I mean, you can see it's him, but... Even any close-up stuff here, it's all Armin doing this.
Yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't. As any character in Star Trek, they're like, oh, and we're going to have you in Klingon armor, and we're going to give you Batleth. Why wouldn't you want to do that?
I was picturing him at his home during those 10 days in the living room with the Batleth, practicing all the moves. I wonder how many vases were broken in the living room.
Glasses of water shattered. This speech makes absolutely no sense. Like, it's almost like gibberish words coming out of his mouth. I mean,
well, he's just stalling.
It's so funny. It's almost as if Armin just started throwing out some speech he'd heard that he cobbled together from, you know, a few different monologues.
Right. Now, important lesson here is if you're going to invent some sort of device that lets you fight with a Batleth and control someone in another room, don't make it where it has like two things that stick way out from your neck, because you're going to end up cutting one of them off.
Especially if you're Worf and you like to embellish your movements. Does this explain my need for her? No. Oh. The bats of love to hang by, and then he doesn't get to finish. Oh, man.
And then it kicks in.
And he's like, I'm done. See, it would have been interesting a little bit if, and I'm pretty sure they would have just because of the money, but it would have been interesting if the holodeck had created the hologram of who he was fighting. So Worf is actually fighting the person as, you know, Quark is fighting him. And it would have made more sense. But I'm sure that was probably just for time and money, having to shoot those scenes. You know?
Although if you had something like that, that person would have to be making the exact same moves as the person that Quark was fighting, or otherwise it wouldn't work. So I don't know. I mean, I guess you could have cameras in this room that are tracking Thopuck there, and maybe that would have worked. But
so she throws this blade to him. How does he catch it? This just bothers me every time I see it. Because she throws it to him. She throws it to him sharp-edged first, but watch how he catches it. As if she had thrown it the other way. Like, if she threw it to him like she normally did, he tried to catch it, would just cut his arm off.
You know, it's like a baseball pitcher. She put a little bit of spin on it. We didn't see it during the cut there, but it spun around while it was in the air.
The classic Batleth spin. How could I have forgotten, Chris? Yeah. Goodness. Forgive me. I sometimes forget these things. I haven't read Keith DeCandido's new book about Klingon honor yet, and so.
Oh yeah, there's a section in there about the classic Batleth spin. Yeah,
how to throw a Batleth. Yeah.
Yeah. And Quark gets the girl.
Yeah, and then, hey, Worf gets the girl. So, and I'm not going to lie to you, I would much rather have had Dax.
No, are you serious?
I know, it's shocking, yeah.
See there, Worf tells Jadzia, you'd have to be blind not to see it. Jadzia's like, yes, yeah. That's what I've been trying to point out to you forever now.
Which is why I'm about to hit you with a Batleth. Oh, goodness. What is funny is that you get the feeling like once she confronts him here, it all of a sudden registers in his brain.
It does, like, yeah.
Oh, I'm the idiot.
Exactly. She realizes this is how I have to talk to Worf. I have to do it with a Batleth. I have to flip him on his back.
Yeah.
Would that work for you, Matthew, right there? Would that work for you?
You know, if Jadzia flipped me on my back, yes. I would have no problem with it.
Now, here's an awkward moment.
Yes. I do love this scene when she starts talking about how the house is the most beautiful thing on the planet and probably the most romantic spot in Bajor. And O'Brien's like, oh my God, I gotta get out of here. I gotta get out of here. This is not going well. What I do like here, I mean, again, it's just so well done, is the fact that, you know, this really is something that is a temptation for them both.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, the fact that she has to tell him, Miles, go, because if you stay here any longer, we're going to start kissing and it's not going to go well for either of us. And there's a point when that kind of thing happens where, you know, it's really no return. You know, you've already hurt a lot of people. Even if you just keep it to yourself, you're going to end up hurting them because it never stays hidden.
Right.
So,
yeah. And then she goes back to Shakar.
Yeah, yeah. She goes.
That'll take her mind off of all this.
Eh, yeah. Apparently, Shakar's pretty easy. You know, you come and visit him with another man's baby in your belly, and he's fine with it. You know, whatever. It's the 24th century, man.
Yeah, gotta be open-minded about these things.
They really do, though.
Get out! Just get out, Miles.
They have great chemistry. And so it was cool that this storyline had afforded them the opportunity to work together more.
Well, they're both great actors.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Bashir,
oh,
what?
This is great.
Oh, gosh. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry I asked. I don't want to know.
The look on Bashir's face is like, oh my god, I've got some other stuff to do over here. And then
well, and I feel sorry for him at this point too, because it's not like he still doesn't probably have feelings for Dax in some way. And
right.
The fact that she walks in with Worf, you know, it's just like, yeah, oh god, this is, first it's, you know, Quark and Grilka. Now it's the woman I still kind of have a thing for, and the Klingon. Oh god, I need a drink.
Worf's got his hair down, halfway out of the ponytail.
That's where you know some business has happened with a Klingon.
That's right.
And in some way, shape, or form, some business has happened, because the, you know, a Worf's ponytail has been messed up.
They have to get married now. They're just an untraditional couple.
Yeah, there's nothing traditional about them, except for the fact that their first time was very Klingon, very traditional. In that sense, but
do you think afterwards they had a big glass of prune juice together?
You know, that's a good question. Does, you know, afterwards, you know, the blood wine that you'd normally have, does Worf order the prune juice? Let's hope not. Seems like that's just not the right drink to set the mood afterwards.
Probably not, though.
Although I don't really suspect that. Oh, yum. You know, blood wine afterwards either, so.
She knows Worf is still thinking about Grilka.
Oh, the last bit there, though, the part I don't love is the laugh. It's a little bit much.
But I was going to say, the laugh, it's like a classic TOS ending.
Yes, that's true. Very much so. It's very good.
All right. Well, there's the end of the episode. So any final thoughts?
You know, Chris, I think the thing that I like about this episode is it's just so much fun to watch in the first place. It's just an enjoyable episode from start to finish. It's one of those, I don't know, it's one of those rare Star Trek episodes where a lot happens character-wise. And you can just sit back and enjoy it. You laugh. You cringe a little bit sometimes at something that happens, but the whole thing is just really a character-driven episode. So, I mean, we were talking about before the show that we both couldn't remember that so much happened in this one episode, but there's right. A lot that goes on here, you know, from the fact that, you know, Kira is going to get back with Shakar, we know, after this episode. You have Worf and Dax get together. You have... the fact that they brought Grilka back in the first place so that her and Quark can actually consummate their relationship and everything is very interesting. So I think this is just an awesome episode end to end, just sitting in Deep Space Nine's canon, really connecting a lot of things, pushing forward a lot of things. And when you start the episode, I don't think that you think this is going to do anything for me. And then by the end of the right. episode, you're just kind of blown away about everything that they have done with all the characters. So that's really cool.
Well, it's easy to think of this one as another one of those Ferengi episodes because, you know, it ultimately is about Quark and Grokka on the surface. But the... I don't know what flies under the radar the most in this episode, whether it's the Miles Kira bit or whether it's the fact that this is the point where Jadzia finally gets Worf to notice her, because that's the element that I tend to forget when I haven't watched this episode for a long time, just how important this is to the whole Jadzia Worf storyline.
That's interesting, because for me, it's the thing that I remember the most about the episode. Like, I always think, this is the one where Worf and Dax finally get together, where she finally gets him to notice the fact that she's been kind of pining for him ever since she noticed his hat.
Maybe that's because you have this thing for Daxes, I think.
Chris, it's probably true.
So as Ronald D. Moore was saying about this episode, he feels that it's one of the best character pieces that they ever did on the show, because all the chemistry between the actors is so good and the conversations are so good and everyone feels very real. They feel like real relationships. And I totally agree with him on that, whether it's the short scene with Odo and Kira, the more extended scenes with Miles and Kira, Jadzia and Worf. Even Quark, you know, seems so, I don't know, shall we say human here? It just feels very much like all the characters are real and you're really looking into the lives of these people as opposed to aliens on a space station somewhere.
Definitely. And it really does work. I think end to end, this is one of Deep Space Nine's best episodes, and you wouldn't normally think that when you get one of its kind of lighter hearted episodes. Everybody kind of thinks of the dark episodes, you know, in the pale moonlight and all that kind of stuff. But this really is, I agree with Ronald D. Moore, this is one of the best character driven pieces that they did. It moves everything forward, and you come away kind of wanting to watch more Deep Space Nine after this happens, because you're seeing all these things that are going to develop.
Definitely. And I love the throwback to The Last Outpost, where we do have a little bit of Ferengi fur going on.
Right.
It's too bad that they didn't create something where, what they need is a follow-up episode where Worf is going to court a Ferengi woman, and Quark has to stand in one room and work the laser whip while Worf fights with the laser whip in another
room. Oh, goodness, this just sounds like a whole different type of episode, Chris.
Maybe it would be a Mirror Universe episode, right? And the Intendant would be there.
Yes, there you go. I think we've just created a new Mirror Universe episode. I don't think this sounds like normal Deep Space Nine.
It does not. No, it doesn't. All right. Well, a great episode. It's been a lot of fun talking about this today, Matthew. But, you know, we've been talking about all sorts of other things, including some DS9 stuff on the network over the past week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Once. I think Sisko and Dukat, you know, in the best tradition of any kind of good writing, you know, the villain is a mirror, flipped mirror image of the hero, and that, you know, that's for Kirk and Khan and a whole bunch of great Star Trek. So, you know, you get Sisko and Dukat, and they have a lot in common with each other.
Earl Grey.
Jean-Luc Picard.
Because he's larger than life for 90% of the show. He is the captain. Okay, like, I'm going to ruffle some feathers right now. I'm just letting you guys know this is going to be controversial. But he is the captain that Sisko and Janeway wished they were.
The Ready Room.
The Voyager Conspiracy.
Now, Daniel and I were talking about this in a prior podcast about the 80s moment, and so I can see Seven coming up. In this episode, I tried to download too much information in your heads. Try not to study too much in school. Try to diverse yourselves. Play with your friends. Go see your family.
Information, too, can be a drug.
Just say no, kids.
To the journey!
Voyager's Funniest Moments.
They're seeing Sandrines for the first time, and you see that pool shark guy who is such a chauvinist pig jerk, who says something to the effect, to Bolano, something like, treat a lady like a tramp and a tramp like a lady. It works every time. And she says, Paris, did you program this guy? And he's like, yeah, why? She said, he's a pig and so are you.
Commentary, Trek stars.
Carnival.
But they are also dealing with essentially general supernatural metaphysical concepts that are not limited to Christianity. So implying that there's a heaven and a hell in this, I think, is limiting because the show very clearly states that they are not playing by any simple rule book.
Warp 5.
Archer and Equine Directive.
In and of itself, that doesn't make it the correct one. I mean, you could argue whether there is even such a thing as an absolute moral position. That is a moral position in itself, to say that we have moral absolutism versus moral relativism, and the Federation adopts a moral relativist position.
Trek News and Views.
Andorians.
I don't think Shatner would have turned around and said, make sure one of them's an Andorian.
No, his special effects would have been, they all have to look like me. Yeah.
There you go.
Literary Treks.
Ongoing 25, the Glitterer conflict begins.
And then you get to this starbase where Kirk and his crew are about to embark on their 5-year mission.
They're eventually going to go on this mission.
Right? Yeah.
Eventually.
It'll happen.
One of these days they're going to go.
It does kind of make me wonder if they're stalling because
they're stalling, yes.
Yeah, they're stalling because of the film.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and there are some days where we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them in iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox Zune. You can stream or download from the website. We have a lot of ways for you to get our shows, so go check them all out, and you can go to trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. Matthew, let's tell everyone where to contact us in case they have any dating advice. You know, if you need to court Klingon woman, anything else they want to share with us about this episode, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb. That'll come to Matthew and me by email. There's also a tab on the right side of every page on the website that you can click and send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. We also have forums at trek.fm/forums. There's a section for the orb and for DS9, so you can talk to us and other listeners about the show there. And in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And we're always on Twitter under username trekfm, where we're tweeting away about Trek all the time. And maybe we'll even start that Klingon dating tip segment up there on Twitter as well. So, Matthew, you know, when you're not giving advice on how to pick up alien women, where can people find you?
Well, if you'd like to find me, you can find me at MattRushing02. That's on Twitter there. I'll do my best to give you the best dating advice I can for any alien species you might run across here on Earth. And of course, you can find us doing literary treks together, Chris, where, in fact, last week we just talked to David R. George III about his newest book, Revelations in Dust, and discussed the brand new Deep Space Nine and everything that happens there in that book. So if you enjoy the Deep Space Nine in your talk here, you can always check us out there. Chris, when you're not getting thrown off bar stools by angry Klingons, where can we find you?
That's a lot of fun. You should try it. It's fun if you wear the Morn suit.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you're not wearing the Morn suit, it's going to hurt.
Right, yeah. It's kind of like a bounce house where the cushiony thing, where you jump and you bounce and you bounce a few times. It's actually quite fun.
Yeah, it's like being the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Exactly, yes. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere on social media under that same username. I also have my own website at cbrianjones.com, so you check out all those places and say hello. And also on the network, Matthew, of course, besides doing literary treks with you, you can also find me on Wednesdays on The Ready Room, where we talk about all 5 live-action Star Trek series, and I'm joined sometimes by Matthew, as well as other hosts from all over the network as we talk about various episodes and topics. And on Fridays, I'm on Warp 5 with Kate Walsh, where we talk about Enterprise, much in the same way we talk about DS9 here on The Orb. So check out all of those shows on the network as well. Also, Matthew, before we let everyone go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsor for this week's show. Your support of our sponsors is very important to making it possible for us to bring you The Orb every week. And our sponsor for the show is Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, a website, a portfolio, an online store, or anything you can imagine. You're gonna love it, I promise, and you can try it free for 14 days. There's no credit card required. Just go put in your name and your email address. In a matter of minutes, you'll be using the great tools of Squarespace to create your own website and find out just how easy it is to make a beautiful web presence with Squarespace. And as a Trek FM listener, you can save 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts by using our offer code TREK10. Plus, if you choose the annual plan, you'll be able to get a free custom domain registration as well. So support The Orb and Trek FM by visiting squarespace.com, and we also thank Squarespace for their support of the show and the network each week. Also, if you'd like to support us in another way, you can go to trek.fm/donate, where we have 8 original alien illustrations that are available as badges or art prints. These are original illustrations by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website, and you can mix and match badges or art prints. Choose what you want. We have different donation levels for you to choose from, and your contributions make it possible for us to pay for the costs of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed every week to bring The Orb and our other shows to you. So go check all that out at trek.fm/donate, and we really appreciate your support of the network.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.